Species.
Unite.
Species.
Unite.
And then a letter arrived in the mail. And it was a woman who had heard about my work to help zoo animals. And she said, there's these two bears living in a cage in the town near my house. It's on a creek that floods every year. It's horrible conditions. I have no idea what to do. And can you help? I don't think she knew that I was a 13-year-old.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. For the months of May, June, and July, Species Unite is celebrating plant-based eating with vegan nights. All that really means is we would love for you to cook dinner for your friends or your family or your neighbor and make it vegan. On our website, we have downloadable host packs with recipes, tips, information to make your vegan night all the more fun and better. So go to our website, speciesunite.com, and download a host pack. And you will be entered to win one of six $275 vegan gift baskets that are filled with all sorts of incredible plant-based products. We would love for you to join us in changing the way the world treats animals. And you can do so by becoming a Species Unite member. For a monthly donation of any size, you'll get all sorts of exclusive benefits, including access to exclusive content, outtakes, bonus episodes, updates, and news, priority access to Species Unite events, a copy of our annual newsletter, and a welcome pack from yours truly. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click Become a Member to join. Today's conversation is with Justin Barker. Justin is an activist, a director, a producer, and the author of Bear Boy, the true story of a boy, two bears, and the fight to be free. When Justin was 13 years old, he started an organization called Citizens Lobbying for Animals in Zoos. And at 13, he created real change for animals in zoos. And not long after, someone contacted him about two bears living in brutal conditions in a California zoo. And Justin spent the next 3 years fighting to save these bears. And even though the book is a young adult book, it is a book that I think everyone should read. Justin is an example and an inspiration of how one person can create enormous impact. And the fact that that person is 13 years old is just all the more compelling. Let's go back, because you also write, the book takes place while you're in middle school and early high school. But I mean, middle school is really just a terrible time for most people.
Horrible.
It just is. And the fact that you did something about it, you know, like that you just didn't let it run you over, which most of us, I think, do, was just awesome. Can you go back to right at the beginning and when all this first started? And kind of where you were, and for people who haven't read it, you know, where your life was when this all started.
I grew up in a middle-class house. My mom was a nurse and my dad was a social worker. I was always lucky. I lived, you know, we never struggled with food or anything like that. But I really struggled. I really struggled as a kid and as a teenager because I was always just so different. And I was very sensitive. And I think kids really picked up on that. And I was fat. There was just these things that kids could really pick up on. And I just struggled with the bullying and the verbal abuse. Junior high was probably the worst. I wasn't oriented towards sports. And maybe I was like a little effeminate, you know, as a like not out queer kid. But like all of these things, there was all these like little elements that people would pick up on. It was just rough.
Yeah, it was like you had all these targets on your back.
Yeah, and it just, and life at home wasn't easy either. You know, my mom and I had a really challenging relationship. So it was kind of like, it felt like I was like from all angles. School wasn't good. You know, as I write in the book, TV was my like really only escape. Like the dream of like having friends and like, you know, 90s TV, like Nickelodeon, like it was really, that was my one like time. Food and TV were my like escapes from how rough things were for me. Going into the summer of after seventh grade, I lived in Sacramento and, you know, it was 110 degrees. It gets really hot there. And I was just rearing to plop myself down in front of the TV. Both of my parents were working and my dad was like, "You're not going to watch TV all summer. What are you going to do?" And I found a book written by Ingrid Newkirk.
What was it called?
Kids Can Save the Animals, 101 Easy Things to Do. And it was like one of these books that it was like a small little book and the chapters were short. But the second I opened that book and read about meat, it was the first time in my entire life that I realized that the meat that I was eating was actual animals. And then this book described what animals go through as they're becoming our food. And I went vegetarian that very moment. And I've been vegetarian, now vegan, ever since I realized that meat was animals.
Yeah, it's a shocker. It's one of those things, I think, when you realize it happened to me around the same age. And it's you're as shocked as you are that this is actually real. You're more shocked that you didn't realize this. You're like, how did I not know that chicken was a chicken?
Right. And I felt embarrassed that I didn't realize what I was eating. And then I was mad at my parents because I thought that they would at least have been honest with me about it. And so it was a whole swirling of feelings.
I love that a book changed every element of your life.
In a massive way.
Then you get to the part about zoos and animals and zoos. Are you thinking like, oh, this is something I can actually do something about?
In the time, it was just a very visceral experience. When I got to the chapter about the state of zoo animals, I immediately felt so drawn to their story of, you know, getting swooped out of, you know, their natural homes, put into captivity, the insanity that it created, the containment, that all just like instantly resonated with me. And that was something that I jumped on immediately. It was like, oh, this is something, I cannot believe this. There was roots of that, you know, like I didn't love going to the zoo. My parents would take me to like, you know, this local SeaWorld, didn't love that. So there was like elements of it that I never liked, but I never fully like had the information in front of me the way this book presented it. Once I kind of got the full glimpse of the zoo industry and what it causes and the harm it causes in animals, I became absolutely obsessed. The first thing I did was I said, yes, Dad, I'm not going to watch TV all summer. I want you to take me to the Sacramento Zoo every day. I started doing an investigation at the Sacramento Zoo, and it was really, really powerful. You know, I would show up and take notes and like observe the animals, and so many of the things this book kind of shared about the pacing and the, you know, all of the zoocosis that being contained causes in animals. I witnessed it firsthand.
One thing I found really interesting and really hopeful and compelling was how many adults helped you. I mean, there were a lot of quote, you know, not so great adults throughout your time there, but you had a lot of people on your side who were kind of pushing you and really, like, they're treating you much older than 13. You'd show up to do investigations and people would come talk to you as if you could really do something.
It was amazing. And I have to like actually like say, yes, it was adults, but it was women.
Right.
It was like, you know, when I called PETA, it was like the women at PETA. It was, you know, women activists in Sacramento. Largely, it was women who helped nourish and like encourage me. And right. that was another thing that, like, you kind of just take your story for granted until you write about it.
Well, and it really seems like they weren't treating you like a kid. Like, they really had all this faith in you that you could create real change.
There's always the, like, stumbling blocks. And to be able to just call somebody up who's like, I believe in you. And have yeah. them, like, be like, keep on going. 1,000 no's, you know, eventually that turns into the yes that you need, these kind of things.
And did it occur to you at the time, were you thinking more like, I'm a kid, this probably isn't going to work? Or because you had so much support, were you thinking like, I can do this?
Once the Bears came into the picture.
Yeah.
Once I like met Brutus and Ursula and saw how terrible their conditions were, I was so obsessed with the, like, that they would get out of that cage and I would do whatever I needed to do to get them out of that cage. There was never a moment that I didn't imagine them getting out of that condition.
Talk about when you first saw the Bears, what that was like and what it was like to be there and why it gave you so much, you know, drive to change it.
Right. So I was working in the Sacramento Zoo, and that was, you know, that was an interesting project because I was getting, you know, I was getting movement. There was like things that were happening with the Sacramento Zoo. Changes were happening in a way that I didn't expect to happen. The American Zoo Association's, there was this big like expose on animal abuse, and I was like the young kid behind it. And I was just a pest. And one day I called the zoo director at the Sacramento Zoo and she threatened to sue me. I was 12 years old and my parents were like, you need to stop what you're doing. And all of a sudden, all this like movement was just completely stopped. And there's just a moment in time where I was like really struggling. Like, I love animals. I want to help animals in zoos. And my parents have now stopped me from doing the thing I really love and I'm deeply passionate about. And then a letter arrived in the mail. And it was a woman who had heard about my work to help zoo animals. And she said, there's these two bears living in a cage in the town near my house. It's on a creek that floods every year. It's horrible conditions. I have no idea what to do. And can you help? I don't think she knew that I was a 13-year-old. She thought I was the zoo version of PETA and focused on zoo animals. And oddly, the second I got that letter, I was like, this is my, I didn't even meet the bears. And I was like, this is my next project. And then it all, you know, my dad and my mom, they said, hey, why don't you go see the bears? They took me to the bears, and these bears were living in this tiny cage that was completely outdated. It was concrete and metal cage. In the concrete on the outside perimeter inside the cage, the bears had worn a thick path from their pacing.
Oh my God.
No one could get into the cage. So all they did was spray a hose with it. And that hose, that water never went away. So then there was this thin layer of allergy that they, every time they turned the corner in the cage, they'd slip on it. So they didn't even have a proper like place to have their own footing. Cage was just tiny, and they were getting fed monkey food. And to then add to it, they lived on a creek that flooded every few years. Their cage would flood and they would get tranquilized, and there'd be this just like urgent need to get them out of their cage, and they'd get relocated.
How long had they been there?
They'd been there for 18 years. Yeah, they were in that cage for 18 years. I mean, in a lot of ways, it felt like their spirit had gone. They would just like stare at you, and they were just like, they were just sweet bears.
And so you knew this, I have to do this.
At first I was like, oh, well, let's improve the food. Like, let's like try to create some like quick change. And so my original pitch was, we got to cover these concrete floors with dirt. So they have like, you know,
sort of falling over.
Yes, earth to lay on, and you need to improve their food. Like, they need fruit and like fish. They don't need like monkey food. So right. That was like my very first thing was I called the mayor and I was like, things have to change. And they were not receptive. Like, the city was not at all receptive. I mean, they basically laughed at me when I made my first call. But weirdly, the weirdest thing was I had the mayor's home phone number. The way the city worked, they're like, when I called to talk to the mayor, they're like, oh, here's his home phone number. This is the best way to reach him. Over the 3 years, I couldn't even tell you how many phone calls I made to him. The mayor at some point told me that those bears were born in that cage and they were going to die in that cage. And those words, if I didn't already like have the belief I was going to get those bears out of there, like that became my like rallying call to be like, I am going to prove you wrong. I'm going to prove you wrong. These bears will not die in this cage. And then it's kind of like the rest is history, really, that, you know, it took a lot of time, but eventually the city agreed to release the bears. And then the effort became, where do we find a place for the bears?
Like, but that wasn't easy either, right?
It was funny because like as a young person who like didn't believe in zoos, I was calling zoos all over the country and sanctuaries. But I just thought like, even like another zoo is better than this. I called a lot of zoos. I called sanctuaries. And then like just by chance, the Folsom Zoo Sanctuary, which is a zoo probably about 20 minutes from the bears, and they only rescue animals.
That should be the only kind of zoos we have left, if any, are rescue places, right?
100%.
There's also just a lot of great things in your book. Well, first of all, because it's written in the 90s, like one of the ongoing things with your parents is the phone bill. I remember those days too. And the phone bill was such a big deal. That was like one of the big fights throughout because you were always on the phone with calling everybody, zoos all over the country and racking up these huge phone bills. Your parents also, because as strict as they were and as many problems you were having with them, they were also amazingly supportive of you in the sense of driving you to zoos on weekends and vacations. And they spent a lot of time, you know, kind of in this battle with you, which I thought was pretty phenomenal.
You know, this story happened pre-email, pre-text, pre-like social media. And like that was a serious battle. Phone bills was a huge battle. My parents were really supportive. And I think that they like, first off, I think it was kind of entertaining for them to like see TV cameras showing up to like cover the story, like have their like co-workers be like, I saw your kid on the news. You know, like there was something that was like probably pretty fun about that for them.
Yeah.
But I think that also because I was like, you know, I'm a bullheaded and at the time a pretty annoying kid in regards to the things I wanted or the things I had opinions about. The fact that I could focus my bullheadedness towards a cause and not towards my parents was probably pretty satisfying for them.
Yeah.
And like they did support me. They loved what I was doing. I think that they like saw me change as a person from like, you know, the struggling 13-year-old I was to like, and how this project changed me. So I think that was it. But I certainly think there was an element of it of like, God, at least he's not like using that sharp tongue that he uses towards like the zoo director towards us. Like there was something in that was helped them like get off the hook in some ways.
Well, I'm sure in a lot of ways it got you off yourself, not focusing on your own misery at the time and focusing on somebody else's really transformed you.
I mean, that's what the whole book's about. That's what like helped me realize that the more that we are helping others, we're helping ourselves. And that's like what that's the kind of the mission of the book is to like help inspire young people to be active, but also to realize like, wow, if we're not so in our heads, if we're not so wrapped up in our anxiety or the things that like that we struggle with, and we're like really thinking more about like the people, the animals, the world outside of us, the more that we can like widen that view and like focus our energy on those things, like that's when the insides struggles like start kind of dissipating.
It's beautiful to watch it happen throughout the book because you really do transform. You seem really happy later and free. Mm. And it's a nice metaphor, your freedom and the bear's freedom happening kind of simultaneously, not freedom, but out of there at least.
Right. I always struggle with the title because the fight to be free, like, is like, they were, those bears were never free.
Right.
Until they were dead. And yeah, like, not in a place with cages. Like, those bears were never free.
No.
But my hope was that at least, like, the compassion and love that they got in the end, and the actions I took to help them free myself.
What was it like when the day they moved and you saw them in the new spot?
It took Brutus and Russell a little bit of time to, like, ease into their world. It was the first time they had put their feet on grass or dirt. And that was kind of overwhelming for them. But in the days, in the ensuing days, as they got used to it, like, Brutus and Ursula would dive into this warm spa that they had. It was a big pool that both of them could fit in. And there was, like, a warm waterfall. And so they loved that. They would, like, chase fish in there, and they would just forage and, like, lounge on the earth. They only lived about 4 years in that place. And they really right. struggled. The years in on concrete, and, you know, the lack of, you know, they were just neglected their whole lives. They had some serious, like, neurological issues, and their bodies had kind of deteriorated in that cage. But it was amazing because Brutus or Ursula, they both were very, like, very relaxed with their keepers at the Folsom Zoo Sanctuary. But Ursula would let massage therapists come in and give her massages. And there was an acupuncturist, because she had some sort of, like, disc issues. An acupuncturist would actually go in and give her acupuncture. And so the, like, trust, they both were very trusting, but Ursula proved to be the most trusting bear, and her ability to just, like, after just how horrible humans treated her for her entire life.
For 20 years, right?
Yeah. To let somebody in and, like, touch her and rotate her legs and, like, poke her with pins, and to, like, the gentleness that she showed in that was pretty. I never experienced that firsthand. I wasn't ever in the cage with her, but the stories I heard were just, like, it really was touching to be like, wow, these fierce animals that people like to, you know, think of them as yeah. are really gentle, really gentle.
It makes it all the more devastating, you know, just like, it's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so heartbreaking that they died not that, you know, within a few years or 4 years after, but at least they didn't die in Rosedale. I mean, at least they had, some good years.
Yeah, at least they got to experience the kindness of humans for those years.
So after 3 years, and you raised $250,000, which is an enormous amount of money for anyone to raise, but especially a kid. And like I was saying before, and your life frees up quite a bit. The bears get moved. But, and at the same, will you talk about, like, how that happened too with your life and the synchronicity of it all?
Yeah, you know, as I was working towards helping the bears, like, I was inching towards, like, seeing myself and, you know, building confidence. And interestingly, in the middle of the project, my parents were like, we're moving to Costa Rica. And it was, like, the worst news I'd ever gotten, because it's like, how dare you take me away from this project? Like, I found this thing that I'm deeply passionate about, and you're going to yank me away from it. But interestingly, leaving the confines of the suburbs of California to move to Costa Rica, that opened my world in a way that I don't think anything else can. You know, travel and just, like, getting out of your own situation, I think, was the major shift that happened in me. I ended up working at a animal rescue sanctuary in Costa Rica, and I'd get on a bus for an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back. It was, like, the first time in my life that I wasn't, like, around my parents. So that, like, really helped me build my confidence. That, like, that journey and that the traveling really helped me build my confidence. It was only 6 months, but when I came back to my high school, it was like, I was like a different person. I had been gone from all the kind of BS that school is, that high school is. And I just really, like, that is when I really began to live life and feel like, oh, I'm myself. I started finding friends in a way. I came out. I was like, was honest with myself about like my sexuality and started being honest with other people about that. That was a really, really huge shift in my life. And I've really never looked back.
When I was 12, my parents ruined my life and we moved to Germany, and we'd lived in the suburbs in Virginia my whole life before that, which I thought was like the best thing on earth. But because of that, I've lived all over the world. I've traveled constantly. I don't know if I would have had the same kind of just openness to just showing up to the middle of nowhere or openness to moving anywhere. Yeah, I might still be in Virginia. Who knows? For me, that forcing me out of like full-on comfort and then opening me to incredible new worlds, that like absolutely changed who I was as a person for the rest of my life. I think especially at that age, like you were 13 or 14 when you moved to Costa Rica,
mm-hmm.
there's something that happens that you realize, oh, wait a minute, there's a whole world. You realize like, this is not it. It's not just this little tiny world you've been living in your whole life, that there's amazing things happening all over the planet.
Mm-hmm. Really powerful. I mean, and I really believe in travel for that.
Well, and I say it because the reason it made me think of me is because later at the end of the book, when you write a little bit about your life post Bears, that you went to university in London and then lived in London, lived in Australia. And I was thinking, I wonder if Costa Rica is why, you know, moves took place, because the seeds were planted when you were in Costa Rica.
Absolutely. Like that early, like go explore, be in the world, go to school somewhere else. I was so ready to get out of California and get away from my parents, and like a better place than London, the center of the world where the Spice Girls were hanging out.
Talk about post Bears, London and beyond, and what kind of where your life has path you've gone down since then.
Sure. You know, one of the things that still lives with me today, the media played a massive role in this story and in the Bears relocation. And it was so powerful to have the Bears be on a national morning show or, you know, in a magazine and see the thousands of people that would respond to that. And it was really like, I was like, whoa, this media thing is like amazing. Like the change, the way that I was able to like spread a message of like questioning zoos and compassion to animals through the story of Brutus and Ursula was really powerful to me. And so I ended up studying communications and filmmaking. And I ended up in London and right. I started an internship at CBS News, their London bureau. And my start date was September 11th, 2001. And,
wow.
And that like, whoa, like speaking of like lining things up, like I had this vision, I was going to be a TV reporter and that like my investigative reports on TV was going to create change in the world. All it took was seeing how national news covers, you know, what was then like the, you know, war against Afghanistan. It was really fascinating because at the CBS Bureau in London, you have probably 25 to 30 monitors of all the different TV networks across the world. And to just compare what the Americans were seeing versus what the Japanese were seeing, it was a really powerful image to be able to see how dumbed down our news is. The fact that it's like, the images of coming back from war are so sanitized. And that experience of seeing the coverage of Afghanistan, I was like, I can't do news. I can't do TV news. Done with that. And I ended up studying documentary filmmaking. And that's partly why I started writing the book, was because I was just like, I have to figure out how like my professional life as a filmmaker, storyteller, intersect with my life and why I'm here on this planet. And that really, I really have landed that like helping zoo animals and like transitioning the zoo industry and really like opening people's eyes to the horrors of the zoo industry is like why I'm here.
It's true because like nothing did anything to fight SeaWorld and all those places like Blackfish, right? And like what The Cove did, those kind of documentaries, they affect like the masses. The documentaries are like create massive change.
Massive change. We're only a documentary away from from really massive change in the American zoo industry. I spent the last 2 years fighting the San Francisco Zoo to get records released because San Francisco Zoo is like one of the worst zoos, definitely on the West Coast, maybe in the US. Horrible zoo and corrupt management. And I've been battling to release documents because I've always wanted to use this zoo as an example of like, it only takes like highlighting one zoo to really to reveal it all. And the zoo 2 years ago should have handed all these documents to me, but have been fighting it. And they just found that the zoo is in violation of city and state laws and also in violation of their contract with the city. And it's taken 2 years to get to that place. And they're still fighting it. The zoo's still refusing to release documents. So that's kind of been my battle right now. And once those documents are released, my hope is that that will kind of start a chain reaction of really starting to do a documentary in this space.
I hope you do. I think one of the things that keeps a lot of people from making a move is they don't feel like they can make a difference. The last three lines in your book for people to ask themselves is what is important to you? Who will you stand up for? And how will you make the world a better place? And I kind of feel like everyone should ask themselves that on the regular. We have a lot more power than we think we do. And your book was just such a enormous, like beautiful example of that. So I want to thank you for putting it out in the world. And I want to thank you for doing all that work and sharing so much of who you are in the book too, because I think that's really one of the reasons it's so impactful. And I want to thank you for coming today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's really nice to have this conversation.
To learn more about Justin, to read Bear Boy, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. And while you're there, click Become a Member and join us. Become a member, get all sorts of wonderful membership benefits, and join our Species Unite family. We'd love to have you. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare minute and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, our intern Talia Fine, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.